Our lesson this morning is taken from 1 Samuel chapter 30. And tragedy is no respecter of persons. You know, terrible things happen to people all the time. But when we hear of terrible things happen to people, we kind of respond by saying, that'll never happen to me, or that happened over there, never here. But yet we know in our heart of hearts that none of us are immune to tragedy. You know, for no reason at all, our world can come crashing down around us. It may be our own fault, it may not be our own fault, but terrible things can happen in our lives that throw our lives completely off course. And this is exactly what happened with King David. His world came crashing down around him. But what's interesting as we look at this account this morning is to see how David handled the crisis in his life, because it shows the type of character that he was. David had a life that was very much shaped by the will of Almighty God, and it made him into the man that he is. And so how we handle crises in our lives is very much an indication of just how much God is involved in our lives. And so crises have to be addressed and crises have to be resolved. How we handle that, we have to go back to the Word of God to find our instruction and our guidance. Let me give you the background to the crisis that happened in David's life. God had rejected Saul as being king of Israel and appointed David as king in his place. Now, these were two men who are very different in so many ways. They had different agendas, they had a different outlook on life, they had a different heart towards God. Saul became jealous of David and began pursuing David with a view to killing him. And so David was forced to find refuge among the Philistine people. And this was a kind of a happy arrangement for a while. But then later the Philistines were making plans to attack Israel. And so for obvious reasons, they were not going to allow David to join them. And so David is sent back to his hometown, to his town of Ziklag. And that's where we pick up the story in chapter 30. And we look here at the first three verses. David and his men reached Ziklag on the third day. Now the Amalekites had raided the Negev and Ziklag. They had attacked Ziklag and burnt it, and had taken captive the women and all who were in it, both young and old. They killed none of them, but they carried them off, and they went on the way. When David and his men came to Ziklag, they found it destroyed by fire, and their wives and their sons and their daughters were taken captive. So David and his men wept aloud until they had no strength left to weep. So when David arrives at Ziklag, he finds the village empty. Nobody had been killed. There was no evidence of people being killed, but everybody had been taken captive. And the whole idea of people being taken captive, of children being taken, we're reminded of that at the moment with the abduction of young Madeleine McCann several months ago. And the media has really introduced us, or allowed us to enter into the lives of the McCann family. And we have some insight into how they're feeling. We've seen them being interviewed, we follow them through the TV media, etc. And we've seen the pain, the suffering, the uncertainty, and all that surrounds their lives. But one of the greatest burdens that they must have to bear is not knowing what has happened to their daughter. Is she still alive? Is she being mistreated? How is she? Does she miss us? You know, all sorts of questions plaguing their minds. But that same nightmare had to go through David's mind. He comes back and he finds his family taken captive by the Amalekite people, enemies. And now he's left to wonder, what's happened to his children? Are they mistreated? Are they being abused? Are they alive? Will they be sold into slavery? These are bad people. And his family have been taken captive by them. In verses 4 through 6, we could well ask ourselves, what do we do in a crisis? It says here, so David and his men wept aloud until they had no strength left in them. David's two wives had been captured. David was greatly distressed because the men were talking of stoning him. Each one was bitter in his spirit because of his sons and daughters. But David found strength in the Lord his God. So finding strength in the midst of suffering is important. It says here that David and his men wept until they had no more strength left. They were emotionally and physically worn out, weeping over what had happened. Quite some years ago, I was visiting with some friends in the States when really a tragedy happened in their lives that just devastated them. Death would have been easier for them to cope with. The details of the incident are not important. But I saw a family absolutely devastated by what had happened to them. And it seemed to be, as days went by, avalanches of more problems just descended upon them. And they wept until they had no more tears and until they had no more strength. And I think as long as I live, I will probably never witness another incident like that, where people were emotionally and physically drained because of what was after happening in their family. I think this is what's happening here with David, that his men, they wept aloud until they had no strength left to weep. This was not just a few tears they shed. They shed tears to the point of being exhausted. Now, David's problem was compounded. Not only had he lost his family, but now the problem is compounded by the fact that the men are complaining against him. It's all your fault. If you didn't do this, this wouldn't have happened. Or why didn't you do that? And then this wouldn't have happened. So there's mounting complaints against David. And then there's the talk of stoning him. Now David has to come to terms with the fact that his family have been taken captive. Now he also has to cope with the complaining of people. And people saying, it's all your fault. And the expectation of possibly being stoned to death by people. So he's surrounded by people who are not happy, who are not pleased with him at all. But on this occasion, you see David's character shining through. What he's made of really starts to stand out here. But what do you do in the midst of a tragedy? The scripture says, but David found strength in the Lord his God. So in the midst of a terrible tragedy, his family abducted, people complaining about him, people talking about stoning him. What do you do when stuff like that happens in your life? It says, and David found strength in the Lord his God. Now, is this just another pious phrase that's trotted out when bad things happen to people? So we tag on some religious terminology. It's the right thing to do. Certainly not. We need to ask ourselves, what does it mean to find strength in the Lord your God? What does that mean? How does all of this work? How do we get these religious terms and turn them into reality for us? And what David really did here at this point was exercise faith. He exercised faith. He came to God, no doubt, in prayer, poured out his heart to God, said, Lord, what do I do? You know, where do I even begin to look for my family? What will I do about all the people complaining about me? You've appointed me king to lead people, and I'm being overwhelmed with problems. And in his prayer to God, God strengthened David. He found all the resources that he needed to cope with the disaster that was after happening in his life. So when we make an application, we can ask ourselves the same type of question. How useful is God to us in a crisis? How useful is God to you when things go wrong in your life? Does God figure prominently in your life? Is God the source to which you go when there's a crisis? Or do you try to fix it yourself? Do you consult God first, or is he a last resort? When we face tragedies, and tragedies we will face, life is not smooth. There are bumps and all sorts of problems that crop up. But when tragedies come, we need to have grown in our relationship with God. Our character needs to have been shaped by God. So that we can say with the psalmist, the Lord is my refuge and my strength, an ever-present help in time of trouble. Now that truth there becomes an anchor for us in the midst of all sorts of problems. That the Lord is my refuge. When you think of refuge, you think of a storm. That you have to find refuge in the midst of a storm. But the Lord is my refuge. That's where I take shelter and protection. an ever-present help in time of trouble. The Bible does not present life as rosy, no problems, just go through life and there's never a hiccup. That's not reality. That is not reality. You know, problems and struggles and battles are part and parcel of life. But God provides us with the strength that we need. We need to be able to take what Peter says, cast all your cares upon him, because he cares for you. We need to practice that. And that's where we find strength in the Lord. That's what David would have done. Cast all of his cares. Say, Lord, I don't know, what's after happening to the children? My wives are gone. People are complaining about me. My leadership is being questioned. I'm struggling. Cast all your cares upon him, because he cares for you. That's why you do it. God is equal to the crises. And we find this coming up again and again in the life, particularly of the life of the Apostle Paul, who found strength in God. In his second letter to Timothy, in chapter 4, verse 16 and 17, he said, at my first offense, no one stood with me. They all deserted me. But the Lord stood by me and strengthened me. There's God coming to his rescue. In the midst of trials and tribulations, etc., Paul had no one to stand with him. But the Lord stood by me and strengthened me. He told the Philippian church, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Divine strength is needed to meet the crises in life. I do not know how people get through life not believing in God. And I'm not saying God is a crutch. No way. Nonsense. But a faith in God gives our life meaning. It gives us direction. Gives us guidance. We can consult God who knows all things and get from God the divine strength we need in the midst of the difficult times that we will experience in life. And so when David lost everything, he found strength in the Lord his God. In the next section, in verses 7 through 10, we find here that David consults God. He calls for the priest. And the priest comes, and through the Urim and Thummim, which is an approved way of consulting with God, God spoke, or God answered David's requests. David wants to inquire of the Lord here, shall I pursue this raiding party? Will I overtake them? That's his question to God. What should I do? How do I respond to this? And God responds to David and says, pursue them. God answered, you will certainly overtake them and succeed in the rescue. And so, in the midst of his struggles, he still takes time to consult with God. And God answers him. I think it's just on an aside, it's interesting to note how later on in the next chapter, when King Saul consulted God, God refused to answer because Saul had a heart set on disobeying God. And then Saul goes and consults with the witch of Endor with tragic consequences. He went to the witch of Endor, David went to God, and God answered his prayer and says, David, this is what you do. Pursue your enemies. You will succeed. You'll get your family back. And that's exactly what David starts to do. In verses 11 through 15, there's a lovely account here, a lovely incident here, of David really playing the role of the Good Samaritan, or taking the time to do what is right. Let's read verses 11 through 15. Now remember, he's been told by God to pursue his enemies. Let's read 11 through 15. As they pursue, go after their enemies, they found an Egyptian in a field and brought him to David. They gave him water to drink and food to eat, part of a cake of pressed figs and two cakes of raisins. He ate and was revived, for he had not eaten any food or drunk any water for 3 days and three nights. David asked him, to whom do you belong and where do you come from? And he said, I am an Egyptian, the slave of an Amalekite. My master abandoned me when I became ill 3 days ago. We raided the Negev and the territory belonging to Judah, and we burnt down Ziklag. And David said, can you lead me down to the raiding party? And he answered, Swear to me before God that you will not kill me or hand me over to my master, and I will take you down to them." Again, I'm impressed with David's character here. We can see here, this is a life that has been molded and shaped by God. Remind us ourselves what's happened. He has lost his family. God says, go pursue them. That's all God says. He doesn't give them any more information. Just go pursue them. And as he goes in pursuit of his enemies to try and recover his family, he comes across this Egyptian. And they take time, they help him, they revive the fellow, and then they say, listen, tell us something about yourself. And he says, well, I was a slave, I belonged to the Amalekite people, and you know, we were doing raids here, there, and everywhere, and we burnt down Ziklag, etc. And David says, can you lead me to where these people are? And he says, yes, but here's the deal. You need to spare my life and don't hand me over back to the Amalekite people. So he drove a hard bargain. The thing I love about the story is that though David was in pursuit of his enemies to recover his family, he still took time to do good when he came across it. He came across this fellow. He didn't adopt the attitude, listen, I don't have time for benevolence now. I've got more things on my mind. I have a family that's missing, that's been taken captive. So you'll excuse me if I don't start to go into benevolent mode here and helping people. We'll do the Good Samaritan stuff some other time. But he didn't do that. He didn't do that. So when an opportunity came his way to do good, he did respond and he helped. Now, he did not know when he helped that man that that guy would be the map that would lead him to where his family were. He didn't know that. I think the Egyptian slave here is part of God's answer to David's request. Should I pursue my enemies? Where can I find them? As David does a kind act to somebody, he did not know anything about that slave until after they took care of him and fed him and revived him, then engaged in conversation, and then found out this fellow knows exactly where these people have gone. He knows where my family is. He can lead me to them. So when opportunities to do good come your way, do them. Don't put it on hold. Don't postpone it. Don't abandon doing what you know you need to do. We need to keep that in mind, of the whole idea of doing good as opportunities come our way. In the Hebrew epistle in chapter 13 and verse 2, it says, "Do not fail to show hospitality, for some have entertained angels unawares." You just don't know who you're helping. I mean, when Abraham showed kindness and hospitality to two strangers, it turned out that they were angels sent by God. He didn't know it at the time. When David was kind to this Egyptian, misfortunate poor soul, he didn't know at the time, this fella has the answer to my problem. He can lead me to where the Amalekite people are and I can get my family back. And so we have to try and take the opportunities that come our way to do good to people. And we mustn't see these things as inconveniences. They could be opportunities from God to do something good for somebody, to bring love into somebody's life, to give them the support they need, or the encouragement they need. You might be the very person that they need at that very moment. Okay, it wasn't on your schedule today, but it was on God's schedule. So go ahead and do it. And don't make complaints by saying, well, it's inconvenient. Helping the Egyptian was kind of inconvenient for David, but it turned out that God used that event for David's benefit. I do believe that God uses the same type of situations again and again and again in our lives. In verses 16 through 20, we find that David goes down to where the Amalekite people are. They're high, their party mood is on, and so David engages in battle with them, defeats them, and recovers his family. In the next section, in verses 21 through 30, we look here at dividing the spoils of war. And as we look at this here, we are given a great insight into the character again of David, the type of man that he was. Let's read it together, verses 21 following. Then David came to the 200 men. Let me back up a moment and explain. There were 600 in all. 200 were too exhausted and worn out to go with David, and they stayed minding all of the belongings, and 400 went down to the battle. Okay? Then David came to the 200 men who had been too exhausted to follow him and who were left behind. They came out to meet David and the people with him. As David and his men approached, he greeted them. But all the evil men and the troublemakers among David's followers said, "Because they did not come out with us, we will not share with them the plunder we recovered. However, every man may take his wife and children and go." And David said, "No, my brothers, you must not do that what the Lord has given to us. He has protected us and handed over to us the forces that came against us. Who will listen to what you say? The share of the men who stayed with the supplies is to be the same as that of the men who went down to the battle. All will share alike. David made this a statute and an ordinance for Israel from that day to this." So when they go down and they defeat the Amalekite people, they take all of the plunder that the Amalekite people had gathered from their various raiding parties over the last several months. And they bring the plunder back. But there are evil, bad people in the group who say, "We're not going to share that with the 200. The plunder is for the 400 of us who went up and fought. Now these guys can have their wives and children and their possessions back, but they're not getting anything extra." And David says, "No, we're not going to have that. Hold on a moment." And it shows me here David was a real team player. These fellows were too exhausted to go down, but they did something. They did stay there and protect their belongings. And they're entitled to a share of the plunder. And I love David that he stood up against evil men who wanted to say, everything we have taken in the plunder is for us. There's nothing there for the 200 who didn't come down to fight with us. Hold on a moment. We're a squad. We're a team. We've all worked together for this. And so we must share everything alike. And that's a great characteristic in David. That number one, he wouldn't let evil people bully him into a situation. But number two, he took consideration that maybe these 200 guys, they were exhausted. They were tired and worn out. But they had accompanied David on many of his missions in the past. Are they not to be rewarded for past performances? Of course they are. And David responded accordingly. And I do like what it goes on to point out, that not only did David share the plunder with the total 600, he did an awful lot more than that. It says here in verse 26 that David arrived in Ziklag. He sent some of the plunder to the elders of Judah, who were his friends, saying, "Here is a present for you and from the plunder of the Lord's enemies." And he goes to several villages, mentions several villages, where he went and shared the plunder with these people. But I do love what it states in the last verse, in verse 30, the last part of the verse. It says that he came to Hebron and to those in all the other places where David and his men had roamed. There were people that did care for David. And in all the places where he had roamed, there were people who were good to him. There were people who took care of him and his men. When David had achieved a great victory over the Amalekite people, when he had received a great plunder, he shared it with those people and with all of those in the other places where he and his men had roamed. Isn't that a generous spirit? There was no greed here in his life. There wasn't, "I was the guy who did all the fighting. I deserve it. I'll keep it." No, hold on a moment. How about the other people in your life? Your last year and 5 years ago, who were good to you? The people who stepped in at times in your life to make a difference, provide some protection, some shelter, some encouragement. What about those people in your life? Do you ever take time to thank those people? And David did. Again, in our own lives, we need to look back on the people who have impacted us and influenced our lives. Take time to pray for them. An occasional phone call won't go astray. An occasional card can mean an awful lot to people. But let's remember the people in our lives who have been good to us in the past. Now, what are some practical lessons that we can learn from all of this? And I've got four practical lessons down here that we need to try and take on board in our lives. is that, number one, we can expect tough times in life, but are we prepared for them? The hard times, they will come. So we have to ask ourselves, what steps am I taking now in my life to make me a stronger person? That when a crisis comes, I will be stronger. I will be able to cope. I will know what to do. That I will be like David. I will know where to turn for help. Secondly, a godly character is invaluable. Our way of life grows out of our character. Our character is a statement, really, of what we believe and who we are. Our character marks the boundaries of our lives. Here's the boundaries, defined by God. And a godly character displays all of that. So we can never underestimate the value of a godly character. We see it in David's life. In the midst of crises, he knew what to do, and he still took time to be benevolent and caring. And he was still a great leader when people objected and said, well, we don't want to share this. He stood up and said, no, hold on a moment. It's plunder for everybody. Everybody's going to get a piece of the pie here. That's great leadership. But that grows out of character, out of godly character. The third point is that a heart set on honouring God will be presented with opportunities to do good. And those opportunities will come at unexpected times. But if our heart is set on God and God moulding our lives, when those, quote, inconvenient opportunities come, we will respond accordingly. And we will be blessed abundantly by ministering in whatever way is necessary to those opportunities that God places in our way. I wonder what would have happened if David said about the Egyptian slave, listen, some other time, we don't have time, you know, let's get on with our pursuit of our enemies. I wonder what would have happened. We don't know. But I know what did happen, because he was benevolent. And finally, God is more than equal to any crisis that comes our way. The strength to survive another day, another week, another year, the strength to cope with a bad situation is available from God if we ask. And I think we need to be like David, which said here that in the midst of his trials, and David found strength in the Lord his God. We need to imitate David in that area. Find strength to do the will of God. And God, who is the source of all strength, will meet all of our needs.